Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, hump day, the sixth day of December 2023. And I got to admit it, folks, right up front, it's another one of those kind of news days. For example, here's one of the stories that we'll start off with just because there are so many of them. From the Center for Death and Control, they have decided to once again change the meaning of words and lie about additional things on their forms. The CDC says Steve Watson via Modernity News has wiped references to pregnant women or even pregnant woman in anything associated with vaccine guidance. Yep, take the poison poke or else. And they've replaced those meaningful words with PC gender neutral terms like pregnant people or pregnant parrot. I'm sorry, that's pregnant parent, but I guess if you buy this, well, wait just a darn minute. I don't want to be disparaging parrots because I have one of those, and I'm absolutely sure he knows the difference between men and women. Anyway, they want to become gender neutral, and let's be honest again here, woke idiotic. Would it surprise you to know they also got rid of terms like he, she, and mother? Unfortunately, when it comes to moves by Big Brother intended to deceive or kill or both, we're just getting started. The U.S. military, remember when they used to actually defend the borders of the United States? Yeah, I know, not in most of our lifetimes. But in any case, the Department of Defense, SIC, has now revised their figures related to, well, the effects of these Zyklon B injections that they tried to give to every soldier, sailor, and Marine. Heart inflammation cases, in other words, following COVID-19, not vaccination. This change says Zero Hedge's coverage marks yet another instance in the military's sick history and ongoing efforts to navigate what they call the complex landscape of vaccine side effects. We have to admit that we didn't deliberately try to destroy our own military, and we certainly don't want you to know how bad the effects are, even though Communist China and all the other real adversaries probably do. Ashish Vazirani, the acting Undersecretary of Defense, how's that for a mouthful and a misnomer, for personnel and readiness, what a crock, cited a report dated October 11, which says that the number of myocarditis and pericarditis cases that they are admitting to anyway, post-vaccination among military personnel, is now down. It's only 80 or 90, which is a sharp contrast to the previous admitted count of cases, 120 within just 3 weeks of vaccination, a number that also, notes the report, excluded additional cases that occurred beyond that less than 1 month time frame. In other words, any long-term effects that kill soldiers, sailors, Marines, and anybody else, well, we're not going to tell you about it. We're certainly not going to tell them about it. And guess why we're having problems meeting recruitment goals? The Pentagon's silence, says Zero Hedge, in response to inquiries, adds yet another layer of mystery to this sudden recalibration. No, it doesn't. We know blankety-blank and well what it's about and what they're trying to lie about. By the way, folks, this story doesn't even talk about the cancers, the turbo cancers, or some of them are now being called, that are up by almost a full order of magnitude since this attempt to destroy the U.S. military by lethal injection. By the way, says the piece, this revision emerges as the latest in a series of actions perceived by those that have eyes as downplaying the vaccine's deadly side effects. For example, in 2021, amidst lots of data indicating diminishing vaccine efficacy, to put it mildly, the military continued to mandate the Zyklon B for all members, regardless of whether they had recovered from COVID-19 naturally and actually had real antibodies, or whether the emerging evidence suggested the superiority, as does science, folks, for the last 100 years, of natural immunity over so-called vaccination, even if it's not really vaccination at all. The mandate was only recently lifted after the Supreme Court finally took half-hearted action under new legislation that the Biden-Fuhrer reluctantly put his X beside. Notably, myocarditis, pericarditis, and other forms of heart inflammation were all recognized as among the adverse side effects shortly after the rollout of the not vaccine. Notably, says the piece, 2021 saw a significant rise, you could say that, in myocarditis cases within the military, which was openly acknowledged, finally, over the summer. And here, folks, comes the expected gotcha. The recent disclosure by Mr. Vazirani in a letter to Senator Ron Johnson further, says the story, complicates matters, and that's no doubt the intent. He highlights the challenge in reporting precise adverse event numbers because it's hard, it's really too hard, to establish a direct causal link between vaccination and clinical diagnoses. And besides, since we have the evidence and ignore it, we're not about to let you know what we know and you're not supposed to figure out. This statement, it says, contradicts an earlier report to Representative Mike Rogers, which cited 326 cases of myocarditis, 351 cases of pericarditis, and 353 heart attacks among military personnel. Folks, back when we had a military and they knew what treason was, The folks that ordered this would be lined up against the wall after a military tribunal and executed for treason. Again, notice the story here. These numbers, derived from Defense Medical Surveillance System and the Theater Medical Data Store, reveal what they, well, kind of underplaying it a bit, call a stark discrepancy in the reported figures. You've heard it before. Lies, damn lies, and statistics. And now, obviously, and I do need to say it again, treason. Here's another related story, and it also fits into the category of how many times have we heard this. This time, courtesy of the New American's Paul Dragoo. Impending disaster, says the headline, is coming to, take a guess, folks, the aviation industry because of the poison-poke Cyclone B not vaccine mandates. And yeah, that sounds very familiar, but everybody who's been paying attention already knows that. Here's another one, this time courtesy of an unlikely source, via the Hal Turner radio show, though. People in no longer Great Britain have been advised that they'd better stock up on battery-powered radios and torches. That's a flashlight for those of us on this side of the pond, as well as things like candles and first aid kits, given what they seem to know is coming, in order to prepare for power cuts or digital communications going down, said the Deputy Prime Minister, according to the Times. Oliver Dowden described the supplies as analog capabilities that it makes sense to retain in the digital age during a visit to Porton Down, the UK's military laboratory. And as part of the statement, he announced the launch of a National Resilience Academy to help people and businesses prepare for future pandemics, natural disasters, and the inevitable and already nicely planned, I can't help but think, cyber attacks. And this was interesting, I thought. The British coverage actually included the term grid meltdown. Says Hal Turner, it's not like we didn't know this, but the timing of this public relation push is a bit worrisome. So then, from there, on to the economic meltdown. Again, already in progress. From Michael Snyder at the Economic Collapse blog, a piece entitled, They're Calling This the Layoff Season. And he asks, is your job safe? Well, according to the Bureau of Lying Statistics, he spelled it labor statistics, there are more than 13 million people already laid off or discharged in the United States during just the first 9 months of 2023. But now, layoff season has arrived. As the end of the year approaches, he says, companies start taking a hard look at the bottom line, which is way down there, it seems, and that can result in harsh job cuts. Back when I was a kid, he says, most companies would wait until at least after the holiday season to shove workers onto the street, but these days they don't really care. So once again, this year there are intended to be a lot of layoffs during the month of December. USA Today even put up a piece entitled, Worried About Job Cuts Heading Into Next Year? Here's How to Prepare for Layoff Season. And it's hitting the media particularly hard. Aw, gee, folks, I can't help but crack some crocodile tears over that. Pink slips are flying all over the place, says Snyder. We're being told that a bloodbath has already begun. Several key outlets are now poised to suffer through another wave of layoffs. The bloodbath began Thursday at Condé Nast, where about a dozen New York staffers exited the famed magazine. Maybe, says Snyder, if they started telling the truth, the waste stream media wouldn't have to let so many workers, sick, actually go. But according to Challenger Gray and Christmas, media companies have already laid off more than 19,000 employees between January of this year and September. That's a 550% increase compared to the same time period a year ago. Here's some more good news, at least if you look at it the right way. Pfizer has announced they're going to be giving the axe to a huge number of workers. How many of them were actually involved in mass murder? Well, they're at least peripherally related. Pfizer officials, it says, have confirmed that job cuts and cost reductions are coming to their Groton campus as part of a company-wide $3.5 billion cost-cutting and restructuring plan that was announced on October the 13th. Just wait, folks, to see if they're ever actually held liable for the millions of lives that their evil has already, arguably, and I guess we'll see whether courts pay any attention to that or not, cost. Says Michael Snyder, does turn out there seems to be a lot less demand for Pfizer products these days, and we can only hope, folks, that if the truth ever becomes widely acknowledged, it'll go to less than zero. On a genuinely sadder note, though, and far more economically important, U.S. Steel announced on Tuesday they're going to idle most of their Granite City Works plant and permanently lay off up to 1,000 workers, while Union Pacific has decided to terminate a huge number of track maintenance workers. Hey, I can't see any problem with that, can you? And from the tech front, the music streaming giant Spotify is laying off 17% of its entire workforce. And overall, says Snyder, there have been over 250,000, actually 256,000 layoffs in tech in 2023 so far. And let's not forget the banking sector, where Snyder notes that workers are being terminated at a staggering pace. Almost as fast, folks, as people who took the Cyclone B are starting to drop dead. The CEO of Wells Fargo just announced that his company will be facing, quote, something like $750 million to maybe just under $1 billion of severance in the fourth quarter due to layoffs soon to be conducted. The company declined to say, says the coverage, just how many jobs will actually be cut. I guess given what we know about executive salaries, it depends on how many of those are in the mix. If it's peons, there'll be a whole lot of them, but the way some of their execs seem to be paid might just be in the dozens. And as you already know, because we've been covering it, and he reiterates, the entire banking sector is in very serious trouble. Central banksters, though, are a different story. Some of them, remember, can actually print money, or at least currency. And globally, says another piece from Zero Hedge, courtesy of Shift Gold, the central banksters of the world have been gobbling up gold over the summer like it's going out of style, or like they're not making any more of it. And that buying spree has now continued into the fall. Globally, central banksters added another 42 tons net gold to their reserves in October. China, of course, continues to be the biggest gold purchaser. The People's Bank of China added another 23 tons to their hold in the month as they expanded official reserves for the 12th straight month. They've added 204 tons this year, and that's only officially. Off the record, a lot of folks believe China holds a heck of a lot more than that. Turkey's made big purchases over the past several months. The National Bank of Poland, says the piece, continued their recent gold buying spree, and other significant buyers in October included India and the Czech Republic, among others. All told, concludes the article from Shift Gold, total central bank gold buying in 2022 came in at 1,136 tons, and that's the highest level of net gold purchases on record dating back to 1950, including since the suspension of dollar convertibility into gold in 1971. It was also the 13th straight year of central bank purchases of gold. And according to the 2023 Central Bank Gold Reserve Survey, recently released by the WCG, or World Gold Council, about a quarter of all central banks plan to add more gold to their reserves over the next 12 months. While 71% of the central banksters surveyed believe the overall level of global reserves will increase over that same time frame. And that was a 10% increase over last year. And as you may have heard, folks, over the last week or less, gold prices in the crooked casinos, even, that would be paper gold, have still hit over $2,100 to the ounce, at least briefly, and primarily not in the CRIMEX or U.S. reported numbers. And that, at least, is consistent with what we might expect. Still on the economic front, got another interesting story about the planned destruction of the energy economy in the United States. The Biden-Fuhrer's 2021 infrastructure bill, says a piece by Tom Ozimek in the Epoch Times, boasted about a $7.5 billion boondoggle investment, in electric vehicle chargers. And the regime insists that the country is on track to install over 1 million of these things, even if there won't be any electricity to power them, by the end of the decade. But actual reports say, so far, not a single one of them has actually been built. Oh, well, does it really matter? A key part of the regime's push to net zero emissions and to destroy the entire global economy by 2050 is to sharply expand the nation's charging infrastructure. Well, at least the number of chargers, again, even if there won't be any power for them. This to align with the mandate that if you're allowed to still have a car at all, it had better be electric. They want to demand that over half of all vehicles allowed to be sold in the U.S. by 2030 be EVs. Don't forget for a second, folks, the grid can't even handle what's out there now, and it's only going to get worse. I'll skip over all the acronyms and associated BS here, like grants and program names and other unconstitutionalities, and just cut to the chase. Despite more than $2 billion of the $7.5 billion in new pork for the federal EV charger funding already authorized under new programs, not even half of the states have started to take bids from contractors for construction, and still, not a single new public charger has been built. Says the piece, the Epoch Times has already reached out to the Federal Highway Administration, which is administering the $5 billion in NEVI pork, with a request for more up-to-date information about the status of the various federally funded EV charger mandates and projects. As you probably know, at least those Republicans that have some understanding of actual economics or physics have been lukewarm on the idea of federal funding, since it's unconstitutional anyway, for EV infrastructure. Donald Trump, too, has voiced staunch opposition to EV subsidies, arguing that, imagine this, folks, the FedGov should step aside and let actual market forces decide which vehicles people drive, as opposed to the regime's intent to not allow them to drive anywhere anyway. And if you haven't figured it out yet, that's what a 15-minute city is for. And I've mentioned this before. Among other things, studies show that a key factor hampering EV adoption is so-called range anxiety, the fear among drivers that their EV will run out of power and grind to a halt on the side of the road with no charger in sight. I guess there's another problem. If they were really paying attention, they'd know that an even bigger anxiety is no power available in the grid anxiety, which means you ain't going anywhere anyway. Maybe they should call that blackout anxiety. Here next, just a couple of comments about a story I've seen all over the Waystream media. Well, for those 15 minutes anyway, but then it seems to have disappeared. But I couldn't help but get the impression that most of the coverage seemed to imply it was a right-wing extremist that needed dying in a residential neighborhood in Arlington County, Virginia, on Monday night. Now, think about it. Do they really actually have conservatives there? The reports say things like 56-year-old James Yu died in an explosion at a duplex located at 844 North Burlington Street in the Bluemont neighborhood of Arlington County, Virginia. He had made some concerning socialist media posts. Interestingly, they don't talk much about what those might be via specifics, but the implication seems clear. And eventually the house just exploded in a massive fireball. This is what we heard originally at 4:45 p.m. Monday afternoon. Virginia police were called out on a report of possible shots fired. Once officers got to the scene, there was a man inside the home that they were aware had fired a flare gun out the window 30 to 40 times, after which the owner of the home, James Yu, apparently barricaded himself inside and refused to make contact with police. As a result, they tried to get a search warrant, but while they were trying to execute it, the suspect fired multiple shots at officers from inside, and then 4 hours or so after they got there, the explosion occurred, leveling the entire property, after which Mr. Yu's body was reportedly found inside. Now, here's the part that I thought was interesting that we didn't hear about until, well, much later, and I only saw this on Zero Hedge, generally via local journalists and their Twitter feeds. One of them, Nick Sorter, revealed some additional alleged information about Yu. Turns out he was a far leftist that posts anti-white hatred and quotes Noam Chomsky. He's accused his neighbors of being spies on socialist media within just the last few days. He has, and this is a real shocker, right? Previously had encounters with the FBI. He's filed a number of frivolous lawsuits against his own wife and sister, and he was former head, of the Global Security for the U.S. Government's Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, or CFIUS. And according to various posts, like on LinkedIn, James Yu is a firm believer in the Russia-Trump collusion conspiracy. And he seems to be a big fan of Hitlery, too. And as Zero Hedge notes, at least one Twitter feed has asked, why are the James Yu developments not being touched by the waste stream with a 10-foot pole? Just what are they afraid to report on?
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along.
Victor Davis Hanson has done it again. He has another excellent essay up on American greatness. As you might expect, the Burning Platform has repeated this one, too. It's called Weimar America, and he asks, are we headed for a 1930s-style nightmare? Because something, he says, something eerie, something creepy is happening in the world, and now it's in America as well. He doesn't spell it with a K, but maybe he should. The dark mood, he said, has been brought on by the elite universities, the diversity, equity, and inclusion industry, and massive immigration from illiberal nations and anti-enlightenment societies. In other words, anti-God societies, too, folks. At Hillcrest High School in Queens, New York, hundreds of students just recently rioted on news that a single teacher in her private social media account had expressed, how dare she, support for Israel. Maybe because she's Jewish. Waving Palestinian flags and screaming violent threats, the student mob, he said, rioted, destroyed school property, sought the teacher out, and tried to crash into her classroom before she was saved from violence by other teachers and the eventual arrival of police. The subtext, though, was that the overwhelmingly minority students, whose school, says Hanson, is ranked academically near the very bottom, even among New York City schools, were acculturated to the racist reality that, since they are the press, they were exempt from any punishment for hunting down their own teacher. As a Jewish and thus white oppressive supporter of Israel, he puts some of this in quotes, she was reduced to, in the words of one of the enthusiastic commenters on a TikTok video of the riot, quote, a cracker-ass bitch. And so the student pack tracked her down as if they were hunting an animal. The old Nazi youth gangs tried to kill Jews because they were not considered white, but now the new Nazis hunt them down because they allege that they are white. And the common denominator? The between the 1930s and the current rise of the new Nazis? It's an unhinged hatred of Jews. Says Victor Davis Hanson, hundreds of such incidents are now occurring on a daily basis. As the country is leaving its Weimar phase, that would be the hyperinflation and other maladies associated with it, and heading at warp speed into normalizing Jew hatred and worse. You've heard the stories, folks. Instructors singled out Jewish students in classes at UC Davis and at Stanford. Pro-Hamas students ripped down posters, swarmed police buildings, disrupted traffic, and so on. This story got some coverage. A pro-Israeli demonstrator in L.A. was hit on the head and killed by a pro-Palestinian university professor. Jewish students were trapped in a Cooper Union University library surrounded by pro-Hamas demonstrators. And even at MIT, Jewish students were warned to keep away from particular areas of the campus deemed dangerous for them. The hatred has reached Orwellian levels of absurdity, and the media, he says, is further emboldened by the Biden-Fuhrer regime itself. When asked about the outbreak of anti-Semitism across the United States, nearly 60% of hate crimes are now committed against Jews, who make up only 2.5% of the population. Biden press secretary Karine Jean-Pierre dismissed them with the false claim that the White House, quote, had not seen any credible threats to Jews. Now remember, folks, this is the same regime that thinks the only real threat the United States faces. Forget hyperinflation and an invasion in the South, and their destruction of the entire energy economy, not to mention genocide by lethal vaccine injection and the resultant destruction of the military, too, are white nationalist domestic violent extremists. So at least they're consistent with the pattern. Abroad, notes Victor Davis Hanson, the world has gone, perhaps, if it's possible, even crazier. The UN appointed Iran, a theocratic terrorist-supporting government that kills dissidents and takes hostages, as the chair nation of the UN Human Rights Council Social Forum, which he says correctly is a cruel joke. So you have to ask, he says finally, what explains this collective madness? One might be that the racist DEI industry assumes that all intersectional non-white communities are victims of, say it with me folks, because you've heard it 1,000 times too, white privilege und supremacy. Therefore, the permanently oppressed are declared incapable of being racist themselves, and they can kill with righteous vengeance any of those who even look white, especially if they're white, and might even be required soon to wear a yellow star. Secondly, he says, and obviously, over the last couple of decades, there's been an epidemic of immigration, most of it illegal, into Western nations from the Middle East. And the bottom line remains, at least if you studied history, pretty obvious. We are on a trajectory very similar to that of 1930s Germany, especially when it comes to out-of-control hatred. And yeah, let's not forget what will exacerbate it, and is right on track too, hyperinflation. That'll have to do it for today, folks, because we are running out of time. Thanks for joining us. Pay close attention to what's going on. Be prepared, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.